So here it's written our university, but actually we are at Heidelberg. We spend our sabbatical year with Lenz Tederbaum, and then he showed us this new field. We came from a completely different field, non-adiabatic effect in molecular system, what we studied in the last 10 years. And then Robin and Lenz encouraged me or Gabor to give a short talk about this field. And then what I would like to present today is at first a very short 5-10 minutes historical background of this field. After, I will write the equations both for the Born-Oppenheimer adiabatic and non-adiabatic theory. As a third part, I would like to present the so-called geometric phase effect, which is very important in this field. And finally, I would like to show the connection between the non-adiabatic field and the lasers. What we would like to start now with Lenz and Nimrod Moiseyev. So, something from the Born-Oppenheimer. So this part would be the historical background. Is it well known that the Born-Oppenheimer or adiabatic approximation represent one of the cornerstone of molecular physics and chemistry? Many chemical processes can be described by using this approximation. The dynamics of the atomic nuclei can be treated in this way on a single Born-Oppenheimer potential energy surface. These processes are, for example, the local versus normal mode description of molecular vibrations, the decay of excited vibrational levels in polyatomic molecules, calculation of reaction cross-section in atom-molecule collisions, and so on. And the other one is the non-adiabatic processes, such a chemical processes which involve nuclear dynamics on at least two or more coupled potential energy surfaces, and thus cannot be described within the Born-Oppenheimer adiabatic approximation. These typical processes are the following. The photo... does it work? I have some problem with this pointer. The photochemical and photobiological processes, radiationless relaxation of excited electronic states, isomerization processes of polyatomic molecules, and photo-induced unimolecular decay, etc. And the non-adiabatic processes, during the last few decades, there were rapid change of paradigm in non-adiabatic chemistry, both the experimental side and also in theoretical side. The experiment one is the femtosecond laser technology and time-resolved spectroscopy have revealed that the radiationless decay of excited electronic states may take place much faster than previously thought. The traditional theory of the radiationless decay processes developed in the 16th and 17th years cannot explain the femtosecond timescale precisely. The other side is the theoretical side. The development and widespread application of the multi-reference electronic structure methods appeared, and using these methods for the calculation of excited states potential energy surface, it was shown that the so-called conical intersection of these multidimensional surfaces predicted by Neumann and Wigner in 1929 are very important. The concept of the CIs has become widely known in recent years, but the CIs are responsible for ultrafast radiationless processes, as it was predicted by Edward Teller in 1937. So conical intersections can be found already between low-lying electronic states of even in triatomic molecules, but their abundance grows with increasing number of atoms in the system and with increasing density of electronic states. For truly large polyatomic molecules, conical intersections are ubiquitous. So I would like to present here some important work, summarization work, if somebody is interested in this field. And based on this work, I would like to give a short description about the equations, both the Born-Oppenheimer and or both the Born-Oppenheimer adiabatic and non-adiabatic approximations. So let's start with the Born-Oppenheimer adiabatic. And non-adiabatic approximations. So the molecular Hamiltonian operator can be written that H equal to kinetic energy of the electrons plus kinetic energy of the nuclei and the interaction part. The small r belongs to the electronic coordinates, the capital R belongs to the nuclear coordinates. We can write it that U operator R big R means the electron-electron interaction plus the electron-nuclei interaction and the nuclear-nuclear interaction. So if we take Tn, the nuclear kinetic energy part, equal to zero, then the total Hamiltonian will be equal to the electronic Hamiltonian. It's equal to the T electronic kinetic energy plus the interaction part. So this H, this Hamiltonian, will describes the electronic motion in the molecule with a fixed nuclei. This one. So using this Hamiltonian, we can write the Schrödinger equation H A minus V and R equal to M R big R equal to zero, where each A is this. So this is the electronic Schrödinger equation, taking into account the nuclear are fixed. And then this is the electronic, this is the wave function for the electronic problem, and this is the electronic eigenstates here. In this equation, the big R only parameter. These are the nuclear coordinates, but here they are only parameters. So this phi n r called, this is the Born-Oppenheimer eigenstates. States. And this one, this is a Pn R equal the Born-Oppenheimer PESH, potential energy surfaces.
So maybe we're all a little slow this morning. I'm certainly.
Yes.
The Pn are the eigenvalues of the electronic. Hamiltonian.
Yes, 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 yes.
So the equation that satisfies involves HE.
So no, this was a total Hamiltonian, and I put the kinetic energy part into zero. So in this manner, I got this Hamiltonian, which is equal to the electronic Hamiltonian taken fix the nuclear motion. Okay, and then if I write, I simply put here this Hamiltonian into the Schrödinger equation, and I, you know, I gave a name for the wave functions and for the eigenvalues. Okay.
So the phi n you have there is just.
Phi n is the Born-Oppenheimer eigenstate.
The phi n is the product form of.
No product. No, this just only the electronic states. We have only just electronic states at the moment. Yes, yes. We are at this Born-Oppenheimer eigenstates.
So
Born-Oppenheimer. No.
Okay.
Born-Oppenheimer potential energy surfaces. What we have.
I think this is a part of the confusion that people normally say that, I mean, some people claim that this is the Born-Oppenheimer eigenstates. Others claim that you have to include the vibrational motion. Because
yes. Yes, yes.
In Oppenheimer approximation, you still have vibrational motion. And some people are therefore confused because they say there's no motion in the body.
Yes, yes, yes. So I would like to give some didactic presentation, so which is just at the university. So I think it's so. This is only the electronic eigenstates. Okay, and then the exact eigenstates. Exact eigenstates of the system. Can be expanded as a Born or in Born-Oppenheimer electronic states. So it means the total wave function, small r, big r, can be written as sum over n key r and then phi n small r big r. Okay, so this is the exact eigenstates, and then I can write it as the product of the Born-Oppenheimer electronic states. So if I put this wave function into the Schrödinger equation, I will, that's for H minus A psi R will be zero. So this is the total Hamiltonian here, the whole Hamiltonian of the system, and then this wave function is here. So this is the exact wave function of the system, which can be expanded as Born-Oppenheimer states of the electronic, Born-Oppenheimer electronic states. So we obtain, so it's a long calculation, but if I put into this equation the H from here, the psi from here, I will get the following. Kinetic energy of the nuclei plus Vn R. This is not S than the Born-Oppenheimer potential energy surface, potential energy curves. This comes from the electronic Schrödinger equations. Minus A. This is chi R, nuclear wave function, equal to sum over M, big lambda, Nm, chi M, R. Okay. This lambda called, that's non-adiabatic operator.
This one here is chi n on the left hand side.
This one is the nuclear. This one?
Yeah.
Yes, sorry. I need, thank you. I have it here, but yes. This lambda are the non-adiabatic operator. Which can be written as follows. Nm equal to 1 over 2n, it's a mass of the nuclei, 2f nm gradient plus g nm. Where I will give that, what does it mean? F and G. F and M equal to phi N, this is the electronic wave function of the state N, and grad phi M. This can.
But which gradient is that? You have a choice of. Quite a few.
Yes. I will describe it later, but this gradient, this derivation is respect to the nuclear coordinates. Okay? And then if I calculate this one, this can be written, it will be important later, but I write it Fn grad HL electronic Hamiltonian psi m divided by vm minus vn for n not equal m. So here these are the Born-Oppenheimer potential energies. So if we are very close, you know, the two surfaces are very close to each other, after then it will be very small, so then the coupling will be very large. So the other, the G. Huh?
We gotta look at the numerator too.
Sorry?
We have to look at the numerator also.
Yes, but you are right, but G and M equal to gradient F and M plus F and M. Okay. So the coupling is here in right hand side. If one takes the right hand side of this equation equal to zero, simply neglect this term from here, we arrive at the Born-Oppenheimer or adiabatic approximation. Again, this approximation is based on that assumption that the kinetic energy operator of the nuclei are very, you know, can be considered as a small perturbation comparing to the electronic motion. So this is a good approximation, that case, if the Born-Oppenheimer states are not close to each other, are relatively far from each other, this is a good approximation.
The nuclear states?
Yes?
What should be far away from each other? Which energies? The energies of the electronic state or the energies of the electronic state?
The energies of the electronic state, the Born-Oppenheimer potential energy surfaces. If are relatively far from each other, this is a good approximation. But if they are close to each other, after then you cannot neglect the right-hand side of the equation. So this one. So then.
And this was a notation for the animals.
Yeah. This, these are the electronic states.
The capital M.
Capital M is a mass of the nuclei. So,
sense of the gradient.
Yes. So, if we are here at the Born-Oppenheimer approximation, so if I neglect this side of this equation, we arrive to again to the Born-Oppenheimer approximation, and in this case, the total wave function of the problem can be written, as you mentioned, as a single product of the nuclear and electronic wave function. Just a single product. This is H n r times p n r, where this is also parameter. That's it. So in the single Born-Oppenheimer picture, we have Schrödinger equation without this, and we have a wave function in this form, only just a single product. But, as I mentioned, this approximation breaks down if the two surfaces are energetically very close to each other. In this case, one cannot neglect this part from the equation. It means the electronic states can couple by the nuclear motion. Yeah.
Of course, you can also make an intermediate step,
yes,
leaving this and just introducing the diagonal correction.
Yes, 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 of course.
This result for F and M, this denominator Vm minus Vn, is this exact or is this perturbation theory?
This is exact. This is not from perturbation. Probably some this is, which is exact, this yeah. But, so if we are close to the two potential energy surfaces are very close to each other, we cannot neglect this expression from the right hand side. And in this case, this non-adiabatic operator cannot be neglected. And then we have to take into account at least two or more potential energy surfaces in the calculation. So let's go further in this way. So I have this, this equation, this one, and then this one. This is the argument I could write, minus A, and then the nuclear wave function here equal, and then this is the coupling. You know, M lambda M zeta M R. So, as it can be seen from this expression, if we are very close, so usually, one step back, we can transform this equation. So it's possible to transform this equation to the so-called two-momentum coupling form. Momentum coupling form. It means that I can obtain some matrix equations instead of this. It's more or less the same form. This is the gradient plus F. F operator is a coupling from there. Square this is a nuclear wave function plus potential energy minus energy of the system, and then let's say in matrix form I should put here the unit matrix and so on, but this is the form.
Is that an approximation? Because I believe you have to neglect the first contribution to your GMN matrix to actually get that.
This is
the final form, yes.
This final form is from this without neglecting anything. So this is the exact. From this, at this equation, I didn't neglect anything and I could get it. So it's called, this is the so-called momentum coupling.
Depending on F.
Yes.
Yes, but there's an extra gradient, which is, I believe, is not.
This is the second order, you know, you means the.
The second order degree with full wave function, I believe, is not in the final expression, but I'm not sure. If I expand your square,
yes.
I will get the last term of your GMN, I will get the first one.
I will show you, you know, how to obtain this, yeah?
So why do we want now the momentum form?
Because I will mention, no, this is not, this is the, total wave function, total, you know, the whole Schrödinger equation for the whole system, including the coupling, and then this is only just an alternative form. At the moment, only this is the alternative form, and then this the coupling came to the so-called so-called momentum coupling. So the non-adiabatic coupling can be. You know, in this way, you can see the equation as a normal Schrödinger equation, okay? Because you have here the potential, you know, not potential, you know, you have here the momentum of the system, the potential energy operator, and the energy. You know, you have a form of...
Well, he said this is now a matrix or a vector, this guy, right?
Okay, so I can put here, I told unit matrix and so on. This is the diagonal matrix here. You know, this is the both.
Chi, you know, solving for all chi at the same time.
Yes. And then this is which is very important. This is the so-called adiabatic potential energy surface of the system. It means this is a diagonal. This is a very good diagonal potential energy matrix, including the adiabatic potential energy surface. If, you know, we have a two state model, we have two adiabatic potential energy states, and then we can take to the diagonal, you know, let's say ground state, first excited states, and the remaining two of diagonal elements are zero. This is the operator matrix here. So this is the so-called momentum coupling form of the Schrödinger equation of the whole problem. But if we are very close to the degeneracy, it means the two potential energy surfaces are very close to each other, we have a degeneracy bonds, or we are very close to this. From this expression, it can be seen, it can be very large. And then if it's very large, you cannot handle this at the equation. It's very difficult to solve this kind of problem where you have a momentum coupling very close vicinity of the conical intersection. So in this case, this is a usual, you know, usual way to come through this problem, to transform this equation to the new form. Instead of using momentum coupling here, you can transform the non-adiabatic coupling into the operator, and then instead of adiabatic potential energy, you can get the so-called diabatic potential energy matrix, which is not the diagonal anymore. So you can transform the non-adiabatic coupling from here to here. Because of this infinity problem, because that is a pole, and then it's very difficult. Sometimes it's not possible to solve the
numerically
not able to solve this problem here. So you can transform this into this, and then instead of using this nice diagonal potential energy matrix, you have to use the so-called W diabatic potential energy matrix. And this is not diagonal anymore. This is the called diabatic.
We will have some proof at some point, but this procedure cannot be exact.
This W?
Transformation, diabatic.
Yes. There are many work on it, and then we worked a lot with Michael Baer. You know him probably. He has a lot of work on this. He introduced an adiabatic to diabatic transformation
but
to solve.
I think it's an important point.
Yes. And there are many different techniques to do this, also for Lenz group, and then Wolfgang Domke group, and then Michael Baer. There are many, I know, 3-4 different kind of techniques which are used to do this diabatization. Yes, of course.
No, I don't understand. Oh, sorry, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Well, if we write this in this momentum form,
yes,
are we free to treat F as just like a vector potential and say that maybe certain momenta will be?
I will mention you this in the geometric phase effect part on my talk, because I would like to also discuss. So, but normally the non-adiabatic, if your electronic state is real, in that case the non-adiabatic coupling matrix is a non-symmetric, anti-symmetric matrix, but the diagonal elements will be zero for real electronic wave function. And then I will show you the tricky in the geometric phase effect, what will happen that way, and then you have to introduce the phases. And if you introduce this, your electronic wave function will be complex, and after then some artificial effect will come called geometric phase effect, and the diagonal elements will appear in this matrix. So this is the... Okay, so...
The question has to do with this use of the word exact in terms of adiabatic to diabatic transformation. It's clear it's not unique, but what do you mean when you say it's not exact?
What I mean is that in general, you cannot transform into a diabatic representation. You have to do that in some unless you use the complete basis set. It's an all-pool qualified, that is what I mean. So unless your basis, you have all the...
Yes, you are right, completely right, yeah. Yes,
I have one last, which may seem to be equivalent here, but it's not. It has to do with whether you're looking only at the Coulomb interactions in the system, which I think is what you have in mind, since you're thinking these are becoming singularities.
Yes. So, in case of degeneracy or close to the degeneracy, this F, holds to the infinite. And then it means we have a singularity. And then the diabatization. The diabatization will come, and then will appear the potential energy coupling. Potential energy coupling. So it means this equation can be written in the following form: minus 1 over 2m gradient j plus w minus a. So yes, I can put it. I will use it later. So I will use it. So this is the, not the most popular, but it's a popular form of the whole Schrödinger equation, including coupling in the potential energy, the so-called diabatic picture. Here, this is the diabatic potential energy.
What
because you didn't say how you remove the singularity by moving it from there to there.
Yes, but to do this, I can give you a literature by Michael Beer. He wrote a physics report paper, 100 pages. This is adiabatic to diabatic transformation. And then to solve this very complete differential equations and to prove this, so many, many tricky things. But also there are many numerical techniques to do this program. So we used one time, which was developed by Mike Baer, but we don't. Okay, anyway, but this is a way what the people are handle this problem. Okay, so.
Can you give us an idea about the structure of the W? Does it involve only the Vn and
Vn? Yes, I will show you the W many times.
Transformation is more simple.
Yes, very, very simple, but I will show you. I will have two small problem. One is when I will go to the geometric phase effects and I will start from the diabatic potential energy, close vicinity of the conical intersection. One. Another one is what Lenz developed. He simply start from the diabatic picture when he, put the laser into the system. So he will start from the diabatic, and I will describe this this also. So going further, so we have this this nuclear, plus W. We can write in this form also. If I put instead of A, this I H bar D zeta. So this is also alternative form of the nuclear Schrödinger equation. And then now one can expand. This is the energy. If you put the energy like derivative.
Okay.
One can expand the potential potential energy matrix, but this is the diabatic potential energy matrix as a Taylor expansion around R0 can be generously can be the Frank-Condon point, and then what you want, okay? And then if we take this we can get the zero order, the first order, the second order component of the Taylor series and so on, okay? Now, the zero-order matrix is diagonal, this one, and not else than the diabatic potential R equal zero, okay? And the first-order matrix element can be expanded in adiabatic basis at R0 in the following way, can be, this is the electronic wave function. This R is a displacement vector relative to R0. Okay, so this is the first order term of the diabatic potential after the Taylor after we did this Taylor expansion, and then the diagonal coefficient. So now when n equal to m, these are the diagonal coefficient. These coefficient called adiabatic forces. Adiabatic. And when n not equal to m, these are the off-diagonal elements, and then these are the derivative couplings. Okay, so this. And now, finally, I will remove the first.
Not in the vicinity of the...
Well, so, sorry, what will go to infinity?
On the previous blackboard,
here?
F going to infinity.
Yes, yes.
Does that mean we're far, not in the vicinity of the adiabatic case?
So, you know, F going infinity, it means this will be, the denominator will be very small.
Right, but that means the adiabatic approximation will not be good.
Yes.
Okay, but is it right that now you're expanding around that adiabatic case?
This is a diabatic, yeah? This is a diabatic.
Right, but the first term?
Yes.
Is just the...
This is only the at this point.
Okay, if I only take this W0, do I get back the adiabatic case? No, yes or no?
If you take...
Only take that W0.
This one?
Right. Do I get back the adiabatic approximation?
No.
Well, those are from the adiabatic approximation.
Yes, right? yes.
But the W0 has the F transformation in it.
Yes. Okay. So finally, we have to define two coordinates called X1 and X2. Okay, X1 and X2. Along two unit vectors, A1, A2. Which are parallel, these two vectors, unit vectors, are parallel to the gradient difference, to the gradient difference and then linear coupling. So the gradient difference is I will introduce it later, but. So these are the displacement vector relative to R0, and then, yes, probably I will mention this later, because one step is missing, you know, and then now. So if we take the following transformation, this is the unitaire matrix. Adjoint. Then the adiabatic potential energy surfaces can be obtained again by this transformation. So this is the diabatic matrix. We can take this transformation. This is the unitaire matrix, and then the adiabatic potential energies, the potential energy surfaces can be obtained again. So if we have a two-state system. And if we take this transformation for the 2x2 matrix and then the unitaire matrix, transform it to diagonal form, we can get the following equation. This is the adiabatic potential energy plus minus will be equal to sum plus minus square root of delta square and W12 square, where? And that's what I don't know by head. the different terms. Sigma is equal 1 over 2 1 1 plus 1 W22, and the delta is equal to 1 over 2 W11 minus W22. And if we take the first order term for this, the W11 in first order can be written as kappa first R and W2 first order equal kappa 2 R. And then this 1 over 2, sorry, here, 2 2 and 1 1 2 2 first order minus first order will be equal delta times R, this is the displacement, and 1 2 W12 first order will be lambda coefficient times R, where the delta is equal 1 over 2 kappa first order. This one is the called gradient difference vector. And the other one, lambda, is equal to the linear non-adiabatic coupling. So, that's what I didn't know by head. So this was the problem. So I need this. So it means that
your delta and lambda are identical to what other people call G and H, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. And these are the first order. We linearized somehow the problem. Okay, and then we have two new things, the gradient difference and then the linear coupling. And now, if I do what I did before, define two coordinates, x1 and x2, and then these are along the unit vectors, a1, and then 2, and these two vectors are parallel to the gradient difference vector and the linear non-adiabatic coupling vector. This will give a two-dimensional space, subspace, called branching space. We will have a two-dimensional space, branching space, and this place is where the degeneracy is lifting, called branching space. This name came from, I think, from David Jarconi. He used this name. And the other is, if we have, n degree of freedom of the system, the another part, n minus two dimensional, will be the intersection space. And the intersection space, the degeneracy is not lifting anymore. So, but returning to our small sample, we have two state model. If we go back there, so we are here, we can write this, that the, these are the adiabatic potential energy curves equal to sigma plus minus square root of delta square and then W12 square, and the delta and W12 were defined there. And we take R null as a point of degeneracy. This will occur when delta square equal W12 square equal zero. So it means we have a degeneracy when this will be zero and this will be zero. This will give two different conditions, and then at the same time two different conditions have to be fulfilled. So it means at least if we have no special symmetry, we need two different modes or coordinates to fulfill the two conditions at the same time. So so this is the heart of the conical intersection. So I need again my PDF, go back, okay, and
so in order to have a conical intersection, you have to have at least two dimensions.
Sorry about that. Just a minute. Okay.
Control L.
Okay. So I'm okay. So this is the branching space here, x1, x2. So these are the coordinates, and then this space is spanned by the gradient different vector and the linear non-adiabatic coupling. And this is the remaining part. This is the called intersection space or seam, which is n minus 2 dimensional. And then in this space, the degeneracy is not lifting. Why? In the intersection space, the degeneracy is lifting. So this is the difference between. So the question, what was the question?
Oh, just okay. Two dimensions in order to have a conical intersection.
Yes, and then this is a consequence. If there is only 1 degree of freedom in the system, let's say we have two atomic system, a molecule with two atoms, and two states have the same symmetry, one arrives to the Vernon non-crossing rule, because this one coordinates. Let's say if we have a two atomic system, we have only just one internal coordinates, the vibration between them, it will not be enough to fulfill the two equations at the same time. But if the states of the diatomic have different symmetries, the surfaces can cross because the symmetry arguments. So it means the W12 will be zero by symmetry reason, and the other the coordinates between the vibrational coordinates between the two atoms will be enough to fulfill the requirement for this to be zero. So this is the rule. And then in polyatomics, the number of degree of freedom means that the condition for the degeneracy may in principle always be fulfilled irrespective of the symmetry of the states involved, because we have many degree of freedoms. So it's in polyatomic systems.
But only so, the interactions.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Once you introduce this thin orbit coupling, then it's a totally different.
Yes.
It's the old and
No, no, but for spin orbit coupling, your dimensionality of the scene drops by one, that's all.
Yes.
Instead of M minus 2, you get M minus 3 dimensional.
Yes, the same. So in our results on this field, what we did, we published several papers on different systems, so we optimized conical intersection. I just would like to show something. Some pictures. We took the C2H2 molecule. These are the different potential adiabatic potential energy surfaces, and then these are the conical intersection between the 1, 2, first and second electronic states, and here the other one. We also studied a bigger system, methylamine. This is the potential one. It doesn't work. Sorry. this one as, and then this is only just a nice picture, but the conical intersection is some okay, I cannot use this one, they're somewhere here. Okay, I can, yes, this one. And this is our latest results. We studied a very big system. This is a tetrahydrocannabinol. This is the most important part of the cannabis plant. And this is a big molecule. So we simply drop this part of the molecule because this part is not important from the non-adiabatic effect. We wanted to optimize conical intersection between the ground and first excited states, but we found that this part is not important, so we simply dropped it, and then we could obtain a little bit smaller system called THC-41 with 41 atoms. And what we could do, we have a preliminary results. We published it, but only just the TDDFT level. So we could calculate a one-dimensional cuts, and then this is the energy. But we will repeat this calculation along the minimum energy path. This is not a minimum energy path at the moment. Only just a good one-dimensional energy cuts, but not the minimum energy one. We will try to find this. But even using this one-dimensional cut, we could optimize conical intersection at TDDFT level, but check it with CASSCF around the conical intersection, because we know that we need a multi-reference method around the conical intersection to calculate the excited state from electronic structure. But we could optimize conical intersection. And then we could at least by this low level to prove that which was found also by poor experimental results, that this is the compound which can prevent this cannabis plant from the harmful UV radiation. So this, because there is a conical intersection, and then if the system will be excited by a photon, UV photon, then can go to the first excited states or further. But there is a conical, as there is a conical intersection between the ground and first excited states, the system can go back very fastly to the ground state again, and for the next photon. So this would be the reason that. This is a photostable system, but this is only just an interesting side. So what I would like.
It's important we understand, for example, how you calculated the simpler case of acetylene.
I just showed some simple.
Now you raised the issue of the approximation. Finding the
conical intersection, yes.
Yes. I'm just curious how you actually get full degeneracy in the crossing surfaces for a subway, for example, a simple case. Is my question clear?
It wasn't.
What are you calculating? Using MolPro or something?
MolPro, yeah. We use the MolPro, but for this, not. We use the TurboMol. For this big system, we use the TurboMol. For the other, for the smaller, we could use the MolPro, and we could calculate the non-adiabatic coupling by the MolPro.
Yeah.
Different level, mostly CASSTF, but sometimes CASPT too, to optimize. Yes, this is a quant, but I didn't want to mention it because I have no time, but if you are interested, we can show you some quantum chemical details.
Okay, later.
Also, yes. So what what I would like to describe is it's a very interesting part of this non-adiabatic field, the geometric phase effect. This geometric phase effect is.
Before you go on, I mean, you get these conical intersections by a certain approximation.
Yes. TDDFT. This one is a TDDFT.
If you go further in your extension.
Yes.
But this.
It means that you have to solve the.
Would they survive?
You have to, you know, in this pressure, you have to solve the electronic Schrödinger equation, and then there are many different electronic structure methods to solve this. But if you handle a big problem, let's say we have 41 atoms, you cannot use such a kind of method which is very costly. You know, let's say you cannot use cos PT2, or cos, even the cos STF is very costly, so we could use only just TDDFT. But because it's a single reference calculation, is you know, Lenz used to call that, don't believe for this method, but in a crucial point, you can check the results by multi-reference, let's say with cos SCF and cos PT2. So, but what we did only, we just solved the electronic Schrödinger equation. And then from the electronic Schrödinger equation, you can get the electronic wave function. And then with this wave function, you can calculate the couplings. Yeah? So the geometric phase effect is so, to your question before, I will start a diabatic Hamiltonian or potential energy. So I will study a two-state system very close to the degeneracy. So this is the diabatic potential, and it can be written as a linear function of the coordinates. So this is a two-state system close to the degeneracy, and then we can write it, the diabatic potential, in this manner. So here the x and y are particulate coordinates. K is a force constant, and if we introduce the polar coordinates, let's say x equal to r sine phi and y equal r cosine phi, where q goes 0 and infinite, and then the phi, you know, 0 and between 0 and 2 pi.
R, q are the same.
What?
The q is r.
What is q?
Q is R, right?
Sorry. Yes. Okay. So if I put this to the matrix, I will not write it again, but Y and X will be changed with these two notations. And after, one can solve the eigenvalue, eigenvector problems for this 2x2 matrix. And then using this and then doing this, we can get the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of the problems. So the eigenvalues will be U1 chi times R, and the U2, these are the two eigenvalues, minus chi times r. So these are very interesting because independent, the eigenvalues will be independent from phi, from the angle. This is one thing. And then if I try to show the picture here, let's say, will be r. And then I try to show this one U1 and U2. This will be something like this. So this is the typical picture from the conical intersection you see in the book. So this is the point of the degeneracy. This is the two eigenstates. And then, yes, of course, this is R, and then you can go the other direction from with the other coordinate, but it's this value is independent from this angle. Yeah? So this is the so-called very famous conical intersection picture. So this is not as then the eigenstate of this problem. If we write, now we can write the corresponding eigenvectors, zeta 1 equal to, I will take the normalization, 1 over square root pi cosine phi over 2, and then 1 over square root pi sine phi divided by 2. And then the other eigenvectors, 1 over pi sine phi divided by 2 and 1 over pi minus cosine phi over 2. So these are the eigenvectors. Now the electronic adiabatic basis set called eta 1 and eta 2 can be obtained from these vectors if I multiply by them by the diabatic basis set. So I have a diabatic basis set. This is a diabatic. I have to multiply with this basis set these eigenfunctions in order to obtain the electronic adiabatic basis set. Electronic adiabatic basis set. So finally, the adiabatic will be the following cosine and the other one. So there are two things which are interesting, that this adiabatic basis set is totally independent from, I called it R, from this coordinate. This is one thing. Another thing is only just depend on the angular coordinates. This is one thing. And another one is they are not single valued in the configuration space. What does it mean? So I was close to the degeneracy around the conical intersection. And if I take a circle, a whole circle around the conical intersection, it means I have to change phi plus 2 pi to go back the same place. And if I put this new angle to this one, you can see that change the sign. So if you take a close loop around the conical intersection, your electronic wave function will simply change the sign. This means the electronic wave function will not be single valued. Will not be single valued, because if you put here, you know, this one is a 2 pi, is a cosine pi, will change the sign also. So how can you handle this problem, that your electronic wave function is not single valued? There are two ways to handle this problem. What I would like to mention here, or the other one is so the single valuedness of the electronic wave function, somehow will cause that the corresponding nuclear wave function is somehow has to be multivalued again, because they have to, you know, they have to incorporate explicitly this behavior in the in some boundary condition, because you need finally a single valued total wave function. So if you have a not single-valued, multi-valued electronic wave function, somehow you need some tricky not single-valued nuclear wave function to compensate this effect in the total wave function. Somehow we have to introduce some specific boundary condition to handle this one. But the other one, which will arrive to the geometric phase effect, is the following. If we take the following wave function instead of the zeta j is zeta g is the wave function of this electronic adiabatic basis set with zeta j. Instead of this, we can use a new adiabatic basis set for zeta j tilde, which can be written as so it means I introduce a complex phasis. So I this will not change the physical meaning of the electronic adiabatic basis sets, because the absolute theoretic square will be the same. But instead of being a real electronic wave function, one has to use complex electronic wave function, and then this will cause a problem. If we go back the coupling, the F, if you remember, I have this in first order, so I have a coupling, the F matrix, and I take the first order of this. I linearized this coupling. In this case, it can be written as the electronic wave function in a bracket, and the middle derivative respect to the nuclear coordinates, something like this. So I put here the zeta. This is the electronic adiabatic basis set, let's say one, and then here the gradient, the derivative respect to the nuclear coordinates, and then again the electronic wave function, and then. So what I wanted in real case, if you remember, and I emphasized that time, in real case this part of the matrix, the 1-1, will be zero, because if we had a real wave function, electronic wave function, the coupling, it's a coupling between the same states. It's no meaning. So this will be zero in our picture for real wave function. But now in an ad hoc way, I introduce a new phasis, complex phasis. So I have a complex electronic wave function, and this part of the coupling matrix will not be zero anymore. So new artificial term came to the theory, and this will appear in the momentum coupling part of the nuclear Schrödinger equation. So in a Born-Oppenheimer picture, we have no coupling in the momentum of the nuclear Schrödinger equation, because we have only just one single surface. But even we have a single surface, we have a complex electronic wave function instead of being real, this part will appear. So this is an additional member of this. It's called, it's called geometric phase effect, because you had to introduce phases into the electronic Schrödinger equation to solve this multi-valuedness problem. So your electronic wave function will be single-valued after this phase factor, but this phase factor will be an additional effect on the nuclear motion. And this is called geometric phase effect. This is called the geometric phase effect. So because this part is zero in real case, but in complex case, it will not be zero. It will be, I can write it. So let's say I have to write here this tilde because I have a complex wave function. The results will be I gradient phi over 2 plus eta 1 gradient eta 1. And then this is 0 in real case, but this will remain. And then because this will remain, this will go to the nuclear wave function, nuclear Schrödinger equation. So with this new electronic wave function, and then with this new member of the coupling, our original Born-Oppenheimer, this is in the Born-Oppenheimer picture, we have such a kind of equation, here, only just a single surface. But with this, even in the Born-Oppenheimer case, one single potential energy surface, my equation will be this one. This is a vector potential. It's called vector potential mediant ruler. But this is an artificial effect. Has no physical meaning. This is because of we introduce this phase factor.
Agnes,
yeah?
What is the value of that? How do you decide on the value of that phase?
How do you this value?
I mean, that phase can vary between 0 and 2 pi, right?
Yes. Yeah, value. Okay, the value of the phase.
Yeah.
It's tricky. It's very tricky. So there is, but, yes.
Just give them, I mean,
how to handle it? There are also many ways. And then, there are also some people who are work on this, but I never did it. I just mentioned what does it mean, geometric phase effect here, yeah. to do some optimization, to take as smaller as possible this one.
It depends on the system, I assume.
Yes, yes, yes,
right?
Yes,
so,
yes, yes.
Okay.
I don't know, I have no experience, I never do this. I just know what does it mean, geometric phase effects, but we have no experience on this size.
I understand that if you put a phi there,
yes,
you get the effect you want.
Yes, yes.
Now,
if you put this phase to the electronic Schrödinger equation, I can get a single valued electronic Schrödinger equation, which is nice, and also the nuclear wave function is single valued, so we have correct, it's a single valued the whole equation, you can use the usual quantum mechanical algorithm to solve the problem, but you have an additional member of the nuclear Schrödinger equation called vector potential, which is because of this complex phase.
The gradient goes in.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key thing was that it's a gradient which goes in.
So I just would like to read that Mead, who is the head of this field, told that one has to choose between the vanishing vector potential and single-valuedness of the electronic eigenstates. It is not in general possible to have both. So we have to decide what we would like.
It's a gauge transformation, or?
Yes.
Does it have an effect on the electromagnetic field?
Sorry?
Will it have an effect on the electromagnetic field?
Yes, of course. Yes, this was measured by also another field, but by Aaron Cooperman, and also calculations were made by him. So finally, I think I have a little time. I would like to show the connection of these non-adiabatic things with the conical intersection. And so we switched into this field. There are two papers which were published so far. by Lenz, and then Nimrod, and then Milan Sinderka, and Nimrod Moiseyev. And I would like to shortly describe this. It looks very interesting. So we take a Hamiltonian of a diatomic molecule in a linearly polarized laser wave. In this form, you know, there is a kinetic energy, translational kinetic energy of the nuclear, and then this is the rotational, the second part. I cannot use this. This is the rotational and vibrational part of the kinetic energy for the nuclear. This is the electronic part, and this is the laser. There is no stick. Probably there is somewhere, but I cannot see. But anyway, mouse. Yes, okay, so this is the translational kinetic energy, rotational vibration, and electronic part, and this is the field. So with the omega L laser frequency, we can couple the two electronic states, let's say the phi E1 and phi E2 of the molecule by a single photon excitation. And they took a simple molecule as a simple two-atomic molecule, sodium-2. And then they took these two electronic states, the X1 sigma G plus and A1 sigma G plus, with the lambda equals 667 nanometer. And due to the symmetry, the only non-vanishing dipole moment matrix elements responsible for the light-induced electronic transition, this is the dipole matrix. And then here some simplification of the Hamiltonian. So we are at the two states model, so our Hamiltonian is 2 by 2. And then we can drop the, the center of the mass motion, and remaining only just the first part is the vibrational motion of the nuclear, and then this is the rotational motion of the nuclear, and this is the potential energy, okay? These are the two adiabatic surfaces, and then the laser, okay? But this one here is very important. This is a diabatic potential. This is the diabatic potential. And then if we diagonalize somehow the diabatic potential, we can obtain the adiabatic potentials. So, one thing is to obtain the adiabatic potential. The another is, if we would like to obtain conical intersection, we have to fulfill two different requirements. One is to be zero in the off diagonal part. Yes, of course, it will be zero if cosine theta will be zero, theta equal pi over 2. And another thing is, the diagonal should be equal, the two elements should be equal. This is a this is the ground state, V is the first excited state, should be equal. So we have two requirements have to be fulfilled at the same time to obtain conical intersection. So, we have a two atomic system, but we can obtain conical intersection because we have an additional coordinates. Not only just the vibrational coordinates, then we have a normal case, but we have a rotational coordinates, and then the rotational coordinates and the vibrational, we have 2 degrees of freedom of the system, and it will be enough to create a branching space, what I mentioned. So we can create a branching space by the laser. So these two coordinates can couple, and then we can create it by the laser, and then in this two-dimensional space, the degeneracy is lifting.
But it's independent of D,
you're trying to say. This is the theta. The theta you have to include the rotation. In your starting Hamiltonian, you have to include the rotation. If you have no rotation in your starting point, the laser will not cause conical intersection.
Yes, but these two conditions,
yes?
Do they depend on D at all?
No. It depends on the angle.
Of course, the whole solution will depend on the.
So what I would like, okay, so so it means that, don't forget, this is a diabolic potential, this is the diabolic potential, and then to diagonalize this, and then we have two requirements, and then we arrive to the adiabatic picture, and then we arrive to the conical intersection whenever theta equal pi over 2.
Okay, but one thing I'm missing is if you actually need a finite momentum of the photon, because you have k in there, the momentum of the photons.
Yes.
Can you set that to zero and it still works, or does the effect depend on the gradient of the field? It's a k dependence. Your original slide, you had cosine kz.
Yes. Yeah. Don't forget, because the first, I was lazy a little bit, and I didn't want to write the expression. I didn't need a PDF, and I used this one. But the first one is for standing laser. So they published two papers, one for standing laser, the first one, for optical lattice, for different purposes, okay? And then this one is a running laser, and then in this case, I can throw away the center of the motion. It's one, so it was just artifact. I am sorry, but I should write it by hand, but I didn't do it, and I just simply put that expression from the paper and then put it here. So this one, this is what I showed. So I have a Hamiltonian, if you remember for the first, the transparency before, I have a Hamiltonian. And then in the Hamiltonian, I have a diabolic potential. So I can find a unitaire matrix, unitaire transformation, and using this unitaire transformation called U, H and H transpose, I can make this transformation. And this transformation will...
What is Z?
Z? It's again this artifact. Don't you should use only just R and theta. R is the vibration and theta is the rotation.
Okay, so Z is empty.
Z is empty, yes. Z is empty, and so...
For standing wave.
Yes, for standing, but I don't care about the standing wave, no? So this is what we have. This is the unitaire matrix, and then with this matrix, I can do this transformation. And with this transformation, the potential energy part of the Hamiltonian will be diagonal, okay? So it will be diagonal, so I will go back to the adiabatic picture, but this transformation will take the non-adiabatic coupling back to the momentum again. So this part of the Hamiltonian will change a little, because the coupling will go back. So it's very funny, because the potential energy looks as a diagonal form. It looks as if no coupling, because the off diagonal elements are zero, but the real physical coupling will be inside the momentum again. So even I have this very nice picture for the adiabatic potential energy matrix, the whole coupling, which is very big because of the laser theta equal pi over 2, will be in the momentum part of the Schrödinger equation. So let's say we can show it in this picture. This is the phi, which is also independent from Z. I'm sorry, this is for the translation for the standing laser, but we have two independent coordinates. This is called adiabatic to diabatic transformation angle. And then we can calculate the non-adiabatic coupling in the following way. From this, this is an adiabatic to diabatic transformation angle, which depend only R and theta, so not Z. And if we take the derivative of it by respect to R or respect to theta, we can obtain the non-adiabatic coupling. So the non-adiabatic coupling around the conical intersection, which was induced by the light, is very high. So that's what Lenz and Nimrod did. And now we went further, and we also could calculate the Berry phase. So the Berry phase is the same as the normal conical intersection. And then there are many new things. And then, so that's it what they found. And then, just to give a short summary, we could see that diatomic molecules exhibit CI, which are induced by laser waves. Normally, diatomic molecules has no CI. The second point is, in this case, the rotational and vibrational degrees of freedom provide a two-dimensional branching space because we have an additional degrees of freedom of the system. The third point is these CIs have strong impact on the molecular spectrum and also could be strong impact on the other physical quantities. And then, which is also very important, the energetic position of this CI, which was induced by laser, can be controlled by the laser frequency, and the strength of these non-adiabatic couplings by the laser intensity. So we can control this CI by the laser frequency and by the laser intensity. Why? The normal, called natural CI, which are appear between the potential energy curves or potential energy surfaces in the system, in the molecules, cannot be controlled. They are just, And the last is, in polyatomic systems, the CIs are given by the nature and then induced by the laser light can interplay and will lead to a wealth of new phenomena, we think. So we would like to study now many things and then for different system to study the effect of the conical intersection which will be induced by the laser, and there are also conical intersection itself in the system, what will be the effect, what will happen, how can change the different physical, different physical meanings of the system and then the picture. So that's what we would like to study.
So you're making our life very, very complicated now.
So we think there is probably, there is also some strong impact of the photodissociation. We have an idea, and now we have to calculate. We have a picture for a simple system, and we have to calculate different things for two-atomic system, and also we would like to go further that, let's say, to take three-atomic or bigger system and where we could optimize natural conical intersection and induce by laser another one. And then how can we handle this one? This later one can be controlled. This is very important. The other ones not. So what will be the effect of different physical quantities? So that's what we would like to do. And that's why we came here to learn a lot on this field.
So it's a good thing this works on diatomics too, because they
yes.
The hardware, the software to do something.
Yes. No, or our own program. We started to work on this field just a few months ago, and now we have something, wave pocket program, how to calculate. We went further for the sodium too. As mentioned, we would like to publish it now. We could calculate the Berry phase, at least because it's very important. If you have a conical intersection, you can calculate the Berry phase. So we could back the same Berry phase as a normal, as a natural conical intersection, and also to calculate the wave pocket dynamics, how it looks for this system, and then go further. Yes, this is the plan. So thank you for your attention.
I had a diatomic molecule and maybe put it in and did a high harmonic experiment. Would this have some observable effect on the spectrum?
That's what I... Yes. I discussed with many people here at the conference to find some physical things that we can find an effect. And this was also the first idea of Sergei mentioned, me to see some impact on the high harmonic generation, but we will see. So we didn't go into so much details. At first, it looked to me, yes, after Sergei came, not, and so we are at that stage. What will happen, so. We have to think about it, because it's funny, because I not only here, but other place, if I met with people from laser field, and then they could see that, let's say for us Hamiltonian here, this is the potential, you know, if I put here zero, then the cosine theta equals zero, theta equals pi to pi over two, they immediately tell that there is no coupling. There is no coupling. But there is a coupling, big coupling. This is the difference. If for our side, for the non-harmonic field, we have a big coupling, but the coupling is not here. It is in a momentum.
So it is the pump laser that induces the coupling and also produces the harmonics?
Yes. Huh? Yes, probably.
Well, I see a lot of problem there, because because to produce harmonics, you need a substantial intensity.
Yes.
And effects like this cannot take a lot of intensity, because mm-hmm. other things come in.
Mm-hmm.
So
we will see.
I would be very skeptical about seeing an effect. You know? Okay. Because this may be fine, as long as you control the intensity and the frequency.
Yes.
So that it gives you the thing you want.
Yes.
In a 2x2, basically.
Yes,
right?
yes.
But now...
In a Floquet picture, that's what Sergei mentioned.
Yeah,
okay, you have a conical intersection in a Floquet picture.
True.
But what happened if you are beyond the Floquet picture?
The Floquet picture?
You have Lempe experiment. If you increase the intensity, you have Lempe experiment here.
Yes.
You'll be just doing resonance multiphotonization throughout
the
system.
But say you had an oscillating diatomic molecule or something like the N204 experiment, and you're actually changing this x coordinate, say. Would that have an observable effect? Would it maybe like change the Berry phase or
So for the Berry phase, no. So the Berry phase wasn't sensitive for this. But you know what so far we did. We went I cited their two papers. The first one they studied the running laser. Standing laser, and then optical lattice. So it's and then on that paper they could, you know, show somehow that the trapping effect will be, decreased by the laser. You know, it will be much less if you introduce the conical intersection by the laser. The trapping effect will be much less than in normal case.
At least the specific wavelengths.
Yes. And the second paper, for the second paper, what they could show, they could, as I wrote here, I think in the third point, they could show that there is a strong impact on the molecular spectra. So they studied this one. They calculated without conical intersection and with conical intersection, and they got it. And so we with Gabor we went further. We calculated the Berry phase. This was nice, the same than normal case. And we calculated the wave packet. So we can do some dynamical things and then to do the wave packet propagation. Throughout this is interesting, but we didn't do anything else on this field until now, so we would like to go further. So we have some pictures for the photodissociation. We think the photodissociation can be also controlled by laser. So we have a small picture and we have to go through on the calculation and see what we will get. So that we are at the beginning.
So you mentioned Kupperman in passing. Which of the papers were you referring to, the HH2?
I think, yes, HH2, yes. And then I think it's around 1991 in the CPL. chemical physics letter, but I have the exact and I can give it to you.
Okay, no, I know that one. I just thought maybe there's some other
papers. Yes.
So can you reverse this effect? You bring the system to this conical intersection and then it goes back by stimulated emission also?
Sorry, I just
speculate.
Yes,
by light, you can bring it to the conical intersection.
Yes, yes.
Should it also be possible to go back?
To move to cancel the remaining conical intersection, you mean?
I'm thinking about getting emission now instead of acceleration.
Yes. Ah. We have to think about, so I cannot. Probably, yes. But, you know, let's say even this high harmonic generation, I discussed with Sergei and then he was so, you know, that, okay, you can do it. It will be very strong impact. And next day he came, nothing. So we were thinking about it on weekend and probably there will be a nice lecture day after tomorrow or also in this high harmonic generation. So we will learn, we will see. So, but, I don't know.